This is Hip Hop Holistic, a podcast exploring the connection between hip hop culture and well-being. I'm your host, Aaron Tyree. In this podcast, we consider hip hop as it's used by historically marginalized and oppressed people from Montreal's hip hop community in order to promote well-being in all its dimensions: physical, social, psychological, and spiritual. And we'll learn from a broad range of guests, including artists, educators, and community and healthcare workers, among others, who use beats, rhymes, graffiti, and b-boying towards these ends. What are the challenges and triumphs they experience while doing this work? We'll look to uncover all that, and in the process, discover how we can continue to grow the culture in a positive direction. On today's show, I'm joined by artist, researcher, youth advocate, and community worker, Marcel Paltish Gutierrez. A former youth from Quebec's foster care system, Marcel has a real passion for both hip-hop and activism. Since 2018, she's been a co-organizer with Rap Battles for Social Justice, a Montreal-based collective that uses hip-hop to confront and address issues negatively affecting many communities today. Here's my conversation with Marcel Paltish Gutierrez. Good afternoon and welcome to Hip Hop Holistic, Marcel.
How are you today? I'm good, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining me today. I look forward to our discussion.
Yes, me too. How are you?
I'm holding up all right. Thank you for asking. No complaints.
That's yes. It.
So jumping right in, I'm going to speak a little bit about Rap Battles for Social Justice. I know you've been there since 2017 now. Can you speak about the work you all do there?
Yeah, of course. So Rap Battles for Social Justice is a collective of artists and activists and community organizers that come together to not only educate the masses through hip hop in terms of different social causes that we find important at the present moment, but also just generally speaking to bring and alleviate some of the pain for future generations. It was created by Dan Parker, who's an educator, a teacher, and an artist himself. And then the legacy was kept on by a few other organizers, which I've been part of since 2017. And the formula is quite simple. It's really having a grassroots popular education approach with through hip hop. So we have an expert from a community organization that speaks to the topic that we're focusing on. So let's say it's racial profiling or climate justice or indigenous sovereignty. Someone who's been upholding that battle for their community and for their community will teach us a little bit more around that, that cause. And then we have a writing workshop. So it's a super democratic. Anyone who's just can count to a beat, can partake. We teach people how to write. And then we have more experienced and more seasoned artists who also partake in that process. And most of the time, the formula is that we have a show. And throughout that show, we'll have up-and-coming artists, people who partook in the workshop, so sometimes first-timers, as well as seasoned artists, so rappers and MCs and vocalists who wrote on the cause we're trying to bring more awareness to and raise funds towards that, the organization that we focused on. So for instance, in the case of Nicholas Gibbs, we made a mural, but we also had a show, and it was Head in Hands, which is a community organization that was legally supporting the family of Nicholas Gibbs, who was shot by the police. And we raised funds for the legal fees. So, and we had a show speaking on, police brutality, racial and systemic violence lived by Black community members, and also created a space for support, community, and joy.
Yes. Regarding Nicholas Gibbs, I understand Rap Battles for Social Justice recently produced a documentary film, My Generation Remembers, which honors his memory. Can you speak a bit about the project and also your involvement in rallying the community to effect positive change following this tragedy?
Yeah, of course. So we definitely do have a holistic approach to not only bring a little bit more of an awareness to the cause, to the general community members, but also support directly members of the community, in this case, the family and the mother of Nicholas Gibbs, who was affected greatly by the loss of her son. And basically, we used a new approach for this occasion. We actually wanted to organize a little bit more sustainably and see how we could push our implication and the involvement of different stakeholders. So what we did is that we informed policy through a mural that we did to honor the life of Nicholas Gibbs. And we had 6 policy recommendations that came through over a year and a half of community consultations with different community organizations and community leaders that have been at the forefront of the battle and the fight against racial profiling and systemic violence and as well as police brutality. And we came up with the 6 recommendations that were actually painted onto that mural. And we had a few MCs and a gospel choir that also sang at the inauguration. So for this event and this project, we basically used for the first time the element of graffiti in like the hip hop culture. We usually focus on music, and also used our voices to write policy recommendations. So the documentary is basically showing the process of this new approach, this strategy that we use to make sure that we could use our collective intelligence. We could use hip hop, which is a democratic tool, since its inception and its creation, to voice unheard stories or historically marginalized communities, and speak truth to power.
Yes, that's amazing. And what was some of the feedback that you got from the community with this whole the whole event, the whole everything that you put together surrounding this?
Well, on one hand, we had the artistic community of muralists that also showed up, because we had the Drip and Soul, a great, like, incredible muralist who actually usually does really, really big murals and is also politically engaged in the way that he goes about his art. But very, very, Black-centric, Afrocentric, and does use his graffiti art to denounce different forms of violence. And, so for all of the artists that were around, I think it was definitely, innovative in the sense of merging different elements of hip hop and having music. And that was really well received. And I think that's really important to take in consideration, because at the end of the day, crossing that bridge between policy recommendation and art still has to be embedded in forms of artistic expression that are loved by people who make them, but by people who consume them as well. And so that was really, really encouraging to see how artists and community members appreciated this way of expressing their solidarity, but also bringing a sense of dignity and honoring a member of our community that had passed in this way. So that was really great. On the other hand, more on the community organization aspect, I think because we included over, I think we were between 19 and 25 community organizations that were consulted, 19 that really partook in all of the process. Just on one part, the artistic community received it very well.
Yes.
So I think
yes.
It's a formula that helps digest the harshness and the violence of this reality and this part of our reality. As a society. And the other aspect was that we really, and that's the part that I'd hope to make sure is replicated. The other thing is, in terms of the community process, it's really making sure that organizations who have been working at these particular fights, and I'm speaking of fighting racial profiling, fighting police brutality, systemic forms of erasure, violence, and discrimination, to be at the forefront of how we shape the process and the art. So that was really important. And the reason why I want to focus on the process is because it will have an impact on the outcome and how it will be received when it's actually a participatory, fully engaging community action like process. So that's that. So the community, and it's hard to coordinate, and it's hard to make sure that we involve everyone's voices, because we're all different. Even within a movement, we differ. But I think it's very necessary to create sustainability in what we're trying to do. And that was the main goal of this project, of this of this mural and this documentary and the work that we're doing by informing policy as well. So it creates more long-lasting change. And finally, for the family, it was incredibly important and powerful, in the sense that the death of Nicholas Gibbs has created a huge tear, a family tear. And this was the first time since Nicholas' death that many members actually reunited. So there's this sense of holding the family together, and holding their pain. That was really important to throughout the process, and we were able to do it, because we're still very much connected to community organizations such as Head and Hands and Hoodstock and Desta and Chalikant, and all of these community organizations that center our humanity at the core of their mission. So that was something I also wanted to say. Like, the most rewarding aspect is to have been able to bring a little sense of comfort and proximity to the family. And the last thing I would say in terms of impact would be how we were able to speak to the commissionary that fights against racism in Montreal, and inform her of our work. And that has led to a broader conversation and different forms of basically the ability to think through solutions and our issues through art, but also through these policy recommendations. So it ended up we were heard, basically, as community organizations, as a family, as like we were heard. And there's an ongoing process to see how we can change our current system and how we can better support families who are affected by police brutality.
Yes. And in terms of I know there was, you know, a push for justice for him. That was what the documentary was centered around. And I know the family sued the city. So do you know the outcome of this case? I know that internal investigators kind of concluded that the police were in the wrong for this entire event. Although they tried to position it like they were defending themselves, and he had a knife and he was approaching them. And I also understand he's an individual that had some mental health challenges. So, yeah, what can you speak to some of the outcomes of basically everything that went on?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yes, Nicholas actually was not armed, but he definitely went through a mental health crisis. So one of the recommendations we put forth is to actually have different respondents and not have the police as first respondents in an instance of a mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. So we avoid death. Unfortunately, the way that the police actually did when the criminal lawsuit, the city of Montreal, well, the police, basically, the SPVM, because they were able to, bring some sort of evidence that Nicholas had vandalized, had vandalized police cars. Days before that or at a prior time, and that was used against him when he was really shot defenseless, and it was, he was unarmed. So it was clearly, a huge, misstep on the police's part that acted on panic rather than reason. So that was the outcome in terms of the criminal law. In terms of the civil lawsuit, it's still in course, it's still happening. It historically makes it difficult to win the civil lawsuit if you've lost the criminal one. So that's why we're trying to see if there are ways we can support the family outside of the traditional judicial system. That's still to be discussed and to be looked at. It's clear that for many community members, this type of injustice and the way that our current judicial system is protecting the SPVM and the police force is still embedded in a system, a racist system, and does not reflect the society that we would want to be living in. But it makes our work as community organizers, as artists, as thinkers, even more relevant to find alternative ways to express our indignation and our sense of injustice. Yes. But that's the outcome.
Okay, so it's still in process, basically.
It's still in process, yes.
I guess we can just be hopeful that something positive comes out of this, this terrible situation for his family in particular. I know nothing can bring back a loved one, but I imagine a loss like this is made much worse when there's such a sense of injustice surrounding it.
Yes.
We'll be right back with more Hip Hop Holistic after a brief interlude. with more Hip Hop Holistic and my conversation with Marcel Paltouche Gutierrez. So, regarding the mural and everything else Rap Battles for Social Justice put together for Nicholas Gibbs, what was your contribution? I mean, I know you're an MC and also a visual artist. What was your involvement in the creative process? The mural, the music, and everything else you all used to bring everyone together for this event.
Yes, well, in retrospect, now I can give perhaps like a more precise title, but I coordinated the roundtable to have all the community organizations to like be part of this project, and also set out the artistic vision with, in collaboration for the mural with the family, with Irma, the mom of Nicholas Gibbs, as well as with Drip and Soul. So we imagined how the mural would be, and then we gave Drip and Soul kind of the overarching guidelines, and then he really he put his own touch of magic in it. And we really gave them that creative space to be able to do that. So I guess overall, like the artistic direction and the coordination of both the round table and the policies. I learned this approach through, I was a youth in the child welfare system, and we used this approach previously in which we informed policy through art, and ended up having incredible advancements for youth in care in Quebec and actually in Canada. So that this was a new model in which we use specifically different elements of hip hop to inform policy. So there was an element of newness since I had experience in the past in with this approach of using co-creative spaces to both create an artistic piece and inform policy. I really orchestrated most of the aspects of this project and collaborated with the people who I thought would help highlight and amplify our voices. So in terms of music, we took Nas's Nicholas Gibbs' favorite rapper was Nas. So we used, he loved hip hop. I just want to put that into context as well.
Yes.
So there's like actually on his neck, you can see on the mural and different pictures, he has a tattoo of Nas on like the his name on his neck. Mm-hmm. And basically we used, If I Use the World. I'm sorry. If I
rule the world.
Rule the world. As a track that we had live musicians as well as the choir that did the hook, and then different rappers. One that's actually the world champion in freestyle, Senegal, Joshua Clark, who was part of our first edition in 2019, Black History Month, our addition was to raise funds for the legal fees for Nicholas Gibbs. Then we also had Jeremy Gibbs. Remy Picasso is his MC's name, who's the nephew of Nicholas, who's an incredible MC and rapper, who performed as well. His song, specifically speaking on police brutality, and we had a few other community organizers as well as rappers who performed. The other song we had was My Generation from also Nas. And finally we had Never Would Have Made It, like we had a gospel arrangement that we used. And those songs brought a sense of joy, of support, and of relief, that even throughout the greatest loss and grief that we can experience as people and as communities, the strength that can transpire through that is creating moments of joy, and that joy becomes a form of resistance. And that is a huge, like, I did not come up with that thought. We have incredible scholars. I believe Bell Hooks also shares that thought, and so many pioneers in transformative justice also believe that's a way of creating a space of healing and of justice. So that was also the idea behind that, the mural really, like the image of the mural, I think also really had its own life and its own power independently from the direction that we had set out for it to have. So that's the other aspect. And finally, like I do want to kind of connect as well through my own research. So my research is on community music programming, hip hop specifically in studio and community music programs. So we had two youth from No Bad Sound that performed BLM, a song on Black Lives Matter. That's the name of their song, which was also significantly important because initially my work starts as a community worker in NDG, in these centers. And we started to create a tool and instrument to evaluate the sense of well-being of youth who partake in this community music programming. And I believe that the event that we put together for Nicholas Gibbs is a step that comes right after that. So how do we bring all our communities, not only within these community centers, but the ones who've graduated in some way, who've made it, and who are using their voices actively to speak on injustice, but also to create a sense of belonging for all of us. How can we come together and use our voice to heal together, and how that seeking justice and transmitting knowledge is a form of holistic healing, and it does bring a sense of support and well-being to everyone that partakes in it, and everyone who can benefit from seeing how our agency can be used towards societal good and advancement.
Yes, absolutely. I would say that, you know, what you just described has kind of been embedded within hip hop from its inception. So the fact that you all are carrying that tradition on in this day and age, when there's a lot of distraction out there, trying to make us think that hip hop is about something else, you know, I find that very very encouraging. The work that you're doing there.
Thank you.
Yeah. You kind of transitioned perfectly into what I wanted to ask you about next. So that being the research that you're conducting that explores the link between hip hop and well-being. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Yes. Well, that specifically is set at No Bad Sound and J2K, Jeunesse 2000, one in Charlie Kent and the other one through Head and Hands, which is a pilot program of Head and Hands. Both of these studios are in community centers that offer a holistic approach to growth, to well-being in a non-judgmental space, anti-oppressive space, and that wants to reflect the brightest of what our next generations can offer, and our generations to this day can offer. And what the goal was really to be able to have an instrument that can be used by the community centers, to kind of gauge the sense of well-being and how it impacted these youth. We all know that there's an incredible amount of good vibes, of a sense of belonging and positive aspects to these community programs. But there hasn't been research yet that kind of quantitatively show that. So that was the objective. And I think throughout the pandemic, we also saw that there some of these programs were not available. And what they've created is just highlighting the need for that space. The studios, I feel, are also very, are a very particular space because it creates a sense of intimacy the same way that you have when you go see a therapist. They're not therapy, but they're a therapeutic space.
Yes.
And a space, in which you can really improve your sense of confidence, your communication skills, your creativity, your ability to really articulate your thoughts and your experience collaboratively, but also independently. So it kind of works on an incredible amount of skills that we need to become better as people. And what came out of this research, I'm still in the writing phase, but at least the data collection is done. But both for the teaching artists and for the youth artists who partake in these community music programs, it's almost like a way of life, a way of leading and improving a sense of a good life, and defining themselves what a good life is throughout their personal journey in these programs that are way more than just a place to record a rap song or, like a hip hop or to make a hip hop beat. It's really a place to grow, to become, to belong and to share community. So an incredible, source of support and provides a lot of good. And, so that's a lot of, that's kind of what the research is about and what came out of it. Overall, just a really positive outlet for youth and for teachers as well.
Yes. And what's some of the feedback that you've received from both teachers and from the youth participants of these programs, this research in particular?
So I've had a complicated relationship with academia in the sense that, I was always afraid to replicate rigid systems, that kind of constrained the ability to be our true selves. Like, mm-hmm. I really wanted to create a research that was by and for the community. So, it took a little bit longer than expected, but the outcome ended up being perfect in the sense that it really did reflect how we work and how we are and the Montreal hip hop scene and how the dynamic of the research, is kind of a replica of that dynamic that is present between teaching artists and youth artists. So for the teaching artists, I think it became a place to kind of reflect on their work and the importance of their work and their own journey, and seeing how actually being in a space where you hold a privileged space when you become someone we learned from, like some sort of not knowledge keeper or wisdom keeper in that way. And hearing them reflect on that role and the humility that transpired, and just seeing how lucky we are to have such incredible humans who hold that the torch, and seeing that, it's just a constant, it's seeking constantly growth and improvement, and that the youth and the center has had an impact also on their creative voices and their ability to connect to their audiences as professional artists and as teachers. And for the youth, it's really what came up the most was the joy. There's definitely a reflection on what they're going through and the tool that music allows them to, and hip hop allows them to go into in terms of like the cathartic component of, mm-hmm. of music. But most importantly, it's really a place of joy, of community, of fun, of a connection, of innovation, you know, where they can really try new stuff and not be ashamed and embrace the process. So that's what came up the most from the two different groups.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. So as we move towards the conclusion of our discussion today, is there anything that you'd like to touch on that maybe I didn't ask you, that you feel is important that you'd like to get out there?
I think, one thing that actually came up recently, we were at a meeting for Hip Hop You Don't Stop, which is a beautiful festival that's been running for, I believe we're on our, if we're not on our 15th, we're on our 14th year. So this upcoming one, but we were just saying how hip hop used to be the underground culture. It used to be really like the genre for and the culture for marginalized folks, and it still is to some extent. But it is now the genre in the world that is the most consumed. It has become part of the mainstream. So. One aspect that one of the organizers was talking about was to always make sure that now that it has such a huge place in our culture, to make sure to include folks who have been historically marginalized at the forefront of how we create space in hip hop. And that to me is a huge aspect to take into consideration when we think about well-being. And, that's kind of the mission that we have at Rap Battles. And that's the mission I have as a researcher and community organizer and youth advocate, is to make sure that we create spaces for those that are still often forgotten, for many different reasons, and put them at the forefront of our common fight. You know, and that hip hop does give us such an incredible amount of space to be creative with the ways that we bring the genre, and we kind of collaborate with different art forms, but not to forget to always keep the underdogs at the forefront of our fight.
Yes.
So. That was the last thing I wanted to say. And just thank you so much for doing this. I believe that music is healing. Hip hop is healing, and it's wholesome and holistic. And I'm super stoked to be able to listen to the podcast and to the, yeah, and see how it affects the culture.
Yes.
Because it's important.
Very important. So before I let you go, I have to ask you, what does well-being mean to you?
I think that it's not the absence of pain, because pain is part of life. It's one of these constant things that will always be there. But it's the ability to cope with pain by balancing a good amount of clarity, of joy, of support, and of fullness. And it's kind of balancing what we have, both negative and positive, into a place where we can personally and collectively move to the best of our abilities, reaching our fullest potential, knowing that there are things that are going to be hard, knowing that things are going to be challenging. So well-being to me is clarity, balance, and definitely community.
Wow, that's perfect. Thank you so much again, Marcel, for joining me today for this conversation. And yeah, I hope listeners get a lot out of this. I really do.
Thank you so much.
There's a lot of good stuff that we were able to discuss today. And yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate you for joining me once again.
Thank you so much, Aaron. Thank you for having me.